Governor Branstad is proposing that the state provide money for water quality projects by using projected revenue growth from an existing statewide sales tax for schools. This hour, the governor on this and other issues. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Governor Branstad joins us live for the first half hour to discuss education, water quality, Medicaid privatization, gun violence, and share his thoughts on the field of GOP candidates ahead of the Iowa caucuses coming up in just 25 days. Then in the second half hour, I talk with a producer of a new IPTV documentary about the Iowa caucuses. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The new Iowa legislative session is just around the corner. Iowa's governor delivers his condition of the state address next Tuesday. By the way, we'll be carrying that live beginning at 10 a.m. Our first half hour, we are joined by Iowa's governor, Terry Branstad. He's in our Des Moines studio. We are so glad, governor, that you could join us in our studio. Good afternoon to you.
Well, good afternoon. It's great to be with you today and looking forward to the 87th General Assembly coming back into session next Monday.
Okay. Because we only have 20 minutes with the governor, we're going to ask you to share your comments and questions via our social media, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's start off with something that's just popped up. It's a proposal from you in the last few days, Governor. You and former Democratic Governor Tom Vilsack, now U.S. Ag Secretary, have teamed up to support a plan that would extend the 1 cent sales tax that's currently spent on school infrastructure projects and use most of the inflationary growth to finance water quality projects. I wonder if you could share, how did this idea come about to pair a sales tax that benefits education with an environmental issue?
Well, it really came from a discussion that I had with Paul Gausman, the superintendent from Sioux City. I've worked with Paul on combating bullying in our schools, and he's been a real leader on that. And so I've really gotten to know and respect him a lot. And Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds and I spoke to the Iowa school administrators last fall. And after that meeting, he told me that Sioux City, which has the lowest property tax valuation per pupil of any school district in Iowa, was very concerned about the fact that the 1 cent of the sales tax that goes for school infrastructure is set to expire in the year 2029. And because it's going to expire then, they're not able to use a 20-year financing mechanism to build new school buildings to replace some of the buildings they had that were built back in the 1800s. And he felt it was really important to get that extended. And then I got to thinking after that discussion, another big issue facing the state of Iowa is the need to have a long-term reliable source of funding for water quality. We have the nutrient reduction strategy, but we have to rely on getting an appropriation from the legislature each year, and it's really going to take a long-term reliable source of funding. So after that discussion, I came up with the idea of extending that from the year 2029 to 2049, which is something schools really want, and having the schools get the first $10 million of growth each year, and then over and above that, the growth over and above that $10 million a year would be shared with the Water Quality Initiative. Now, I want to give a little background about this. When I was governor before, I think back in 1998, at the urging of Sioux City and some other districts, we passed local option sales tax for school infrastructure, and that worked out quite well, especially if you were a district that had a lot of retail sales, like Des Moines or Sioux City or places that had a big commercial center. But if you were a rural area, didn't have as many sales, even if your county passed a local option sales tax for school infrastructure, you didn't get much money. So in the year 2008, for fiscal year 2009, the Iowa legislature went to a statewide sales tax for school infrastructure. And that first year, it brought in $374 million for school infrastructure, and it's distributed on a per-student basis throughout the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And let me also point out that between 2009 and now, this is fiscal year 2016, it has grown from $374 million to this year it's estimated it's going to get $458 million for schools.
Mm-hmm. But I guess back to the crux of this, the pairing of these two, some are seeing as siphoning off education money, which people feel, some people feel should be fully funded by that that extension of sales tax.
Well, first of all, it's not education money. It's education infrastructure money. This cannot be used for the general fund of schools.
Okay.
This is a separate fund,
right.
And we're mm-hmm. one of just a handful of states that uses a statewide sales tax to help with school infrastructure. Why this is important is otherwise most of the school money for school infrastructure comes from property tax, and you have to pass a bond issue and get 60% vote, and property tax is a very unpopular way to fund it. So schools really like having this additional option of the sales tax going for schools, and as I pointed out, it has grown from the first year of $374 million to now $458 million. And my proposal, the first $10 million in growth every year would go to schools. Plus, the biggest thing is extending this from the present law, which expires in 2029, to 2049. So the schools would get, over this period of time, $20.7 billion in additional money for school infrastructure. It would also generate nearly $4.7 billion to provide a long-term source of funding for protecting Iowa's water quality.
Let's get a couple questions in here from social media concerning this issue before we move on to the next, if we could. Governor Joe in Boone emails, instead of a statewide tax on all Iowans, why not target a targeted tax on those who profit directly from the application of the nitrogen that causes Iowa's water problems? Manufacturers, farmers, consumers who buy pork products, for example, asks Joe in Boone.
Well, first of all, we already have taxes that are paid by these different groups. The water quality issue is really a statewide issue, and it's not just farmers, because about one-fourth of this money goes for point source of pollution that comes from municipalities. And so the money from the nutrient reduction strategy goes to help communities of all sizes with their water treatment, their wastewater treatment, their sewer treatment, as well as providing incentives to encourage better practices to reduce loss of nutrients. I would also point out we have a lot of rich land in Iowa that has already a lot of these nutrients in the soil. When our crops are growing, they take up that nutrients. But what we need to do is make sure that when we have a time like this year is a great example of it, very wet time, and we have not seen the ground frozen, and this is when we lose nutrients if we don't have adequate cover. That's why we're trying to go not only to buffer strips and grass waterways and things like that, but also to additional things that can be done to help reduce the loss of nutrients like cover crops.
Governor, a number of our listeners have mentioned the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Fund. Let me just read this from an email in Janine in Des Moines. Says, instead of accessing the statewide sales tax for schools as a means of addressing water quality, would the governor instead support funding the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Fund? The trust fund has bipartisan support. 63% of Iowans approved the creation of this fund in 2010, and water quality can be positively affected, she writes, by 5 of the 7 vehicles in this trust fund.
That is predicated on raising the state sales tax. And that, when that vote was taken in 2010, it says the next time the sales tax is increased, I am not recommending an increase in the sales tax, and I don't think there is support in the legislature to raise taxes.
Mm-hmm. Water quality does not meet the urgency to raise the sales tax?
No, I think we can find a better way to address the issue of water quality, and it doesn't go to a diverse group of and initially I would say the things that are identified in that are good things, and things that hopefully can be dealt with through the legislative appropriations process, or if there's a sales tax increase sometime in the future. But I think the urgency of addressing the water quality issue is why it's important to do this now and to use the existing source of funding that can meet both the needs, growing needs for school infrastructure as well as water quality. And as I pointed out, the amount of money going for school infrastructure has not only grown from $374 million to $458 million. Under this proposal, it will grow from $458 million in this fiscal year to $788 million each fiscal year. And in the fiscal year 2049, it will be $788 million. That's a lot of money going for school infrastructure. It's not a reduction. It's a major increase, but it's done over a period of time. And also, at the same time, we could see funding for nutrient reduction and point source pollution addressed through this water quality initiative.
So happy to have Iowa Governor Terry Branstad live in our Des Moines studio this half hour. We have about 10 minutes left with the governor. Let's move on to another big item that you've been behind. You've been moving to transfer Medicaid management to national for-profit companies. You say that privatizing Medicaid in this way would save the state over $50 million. But as we learned a couple of weeks ago, federal administrators have ordered Iowa to wait at least 60 days past the original start date of January 1st before shifting the Medicaid program to private management. This is a huge program, over $4 billion in Medicaid, over 560,000 poor or disabled Iowans who receive health care under this program. I'm wondering, what evidence and research did you use to come up with this plan, a plan that has been deemed as too rushed by the federal government?
Well, first of all, most of the states in this country have already done this. So 30-some states have already done this. It's worked effectively in those states. And the whole goal here is to improve health outcomes for Iowans. The problem we've got is Medicaid has grown so much in cost that it's now eating up most of our budget. If we don't go to managed care, it will virtually eat up all the growth in revenue, and there will be no money for education or any other programs. So it is critically important that we do this. Other states, big states like California, New York, and Illinois have already done it, and we want to use the best practices and the experiences of those other states. And, the federal agency that oversees this program has delayed this until March 1, but it's critically important that we move forward with it, because if we don't, literally the old payment system for Medicaid, which is based on a system where you reimburse procedures, is going to cost so much in the coming years that it's going to eat up all the growth in revenue. So I think people recognize that we need a more modern system that focuses on coordinating those services so we don't have duplication and we don't have one doctor prescribing one drug and another doctor that doesn't coordinate with that physician prescribing something else that conflicts with it, and then the patient ends up in the hospital and costs a lot more money and their health deteriorates.
Okay. Governor Branstad, want to move on to education. I know Medicaid privatization, a hot topic. We've had many shows on it, but unfortunately we can't, due to time, delve into that anymore. This half hour, education funding, top priority of many Iowa lawmakers when the legislature gavels back into session on Monday. Lawmakers last session approved a 1.25 allowable growth rate last year. You vetoed $55 million in one-time spending for K-12 schools. I wonder, when a bipartisan legislature, the House in the hands of the Republicans, the Senate in the hands of the Democrats, when that finds a compromise, a tough-fought issue like this, education funding, don't you feel an obligation to go along with it?
Not when it violates the tenet of good fiscal policy. The Iowa Taxpayers Association, their number one item on things that the state should not do is use one-time money for ongoing expenses. Mm-hmm. That's what got the state in trouble before, and it led to, under Governor Culver, a 10% across-the-board cut, created a lot of disruption for education and for government. I promise when I ran for governor, we'll never do that again. We're not going to use one-time money for ongoing expenses. We're going to restore the cash reserve and economic emergency account. We've done that. We're now a well-managed state, and we're not going to go back into those bad budgeting practices. And I made that clear all the time that I've been governor. I did recommend last year funding for 2 years, and the second year, in addition, first of all, we're phasing in a $150 million commitment to teacher leadership and compensation, and that's in the budget, $50 million a year. We've done 2 years of that. In my budget for this coming year, we're recommending that. And I'm very hopeful, despite the budget issues that we have, the avian flu, the reduction in the price of commodities below the cost of production has driven down state revenue. But I'm still hopeful, and it won't be easy because we've had to cut many other areas of the budget to try to get to 2.45% supplemental state aid on top of all the other things that we're doing through the teacher leadership and compensation and the early childhood reading programs for education.
In recent interviews, let's switch quickly to gun control, which has been in the news the last few days. In recent interviews, you've said you're not planning to change any of Iowa's current gun laws. Given the increasing concern about gun violence and the president's executive actions, would there be any provisions of gun control that you would support? Do you support the governance, the president's actions, for instance?
No, I don't think so, because a lot of people feel that what the president is doing violates the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. And that it's a very controversial thing. I'm sure it's going to end up in the courts. I think that we need to work together on things that can help deal with some of the underlying causes, such as mental health issues. We're going through a major mental health redesign in the state of Iowa, and our Iowa Health and Wellness Plan has made it possible for people suffering from these ailments to be able to get assistance and to have health care coverage now through the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. And I think dealing with the underlying cause rather than taking away the rights of the honest law-abiding citizen makes more sense.
Okay, on to some leftover legislation from last year. The legislation to provide cannabis oil for families with epileptic children has been almost completely ineffective, Governor, in helping those families because it's still illegal to produce that oil in this state. It's also illegal to transport it from other states. Would you recommend anything else? Do you support a type of expansion to Iowa's medical marijuana laws this session?
Well, I think it's really going to depend on the Federal Drug Administration. Legislators tell me that they're reluctant to go further without the Federal Drug Administration saying this is safe and effective. We responded to concerns of families in Iowa and have tried to make it possible for those people that are suffering from epilepsy to have this available. But we also recognize there are federal laws as well that have to be abided by. And this is something that
if you allowed it to be produced in the state, that would get by those federal laws, wouldn't it?
Well, I think we want to look at what's been done in other states, and a lot of people are concerned about what's happened in Colorado and some of the things that are going on because of that and the additional illegal use of drugs by people that are not supposed to have it for medical reasons because of what's happened in many of these other states. And I think we want to be very careful. We want to be empathetic and helpful to the families that are facing this significant problem. But we also want to respond to the concerns of law enforcement and the medical community and want to make sure that we don't jeopardize the health of our citizens.
Mm-hmm. Governor, we have you for a couple more minutes, and I can't let you get away without asking you about the Iowa caucuses, the 2016 Iowa caucuses, just 25 days away. When I look at polls, Ted Cruz continues to hold a small advantage over Donald Trump in the GOP column in Iowa, according to the polling aggregator Real Clear Politics. I wonder, what Republican candidate do you feel most energized by at this time?
Well, first of all, I've tried to encourage them all to come to Iowa early and often and do like Senator Grassley and I and Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and now Senator Ernst are doing, go to all 99 counties. Meet the people of Iowa, answer their questions, share with Iowans their vision and their goals to get America back on track. I mean, right now, we live in a very dangerous world. People are very concerned about the ISIS and the threats that we see in our country as well as throughout the world, and the national debt, which is at a staggering level and I think approaching $19 trillion. And I think the person that can show that they have the leadership and the ability to address those issues will have a good chance. It's a big field, and I have felt that as governor I should be, a good host. Encourage them all. Just tell them to come to Iowa early and often. I think a lot of them have been doing that, spending a lot of time here. And the only poll that really counts, and a lot of Iowans are probably not going to make up their mind till you get close to February 1st, the only poll that really counts is the one they take on caucus night.
Okay.
So it's important for people to get out and show their preference on caucus night.
Okay, you're not going to name a candidate
I'm not going to name a candidate because first of all, a lot of them are friends of mine. Governor Chris Christie was chair of the National Republican Governors and helped me a great deal. I have a lot of respect for him. A lot of my other governor friends, like Governor Perry and Governor Scott Walker, have dropped out, as has Governor Jindal. But you got former Governor Huckabee and former Governor Bush and many others that are not governors. But I have a lot of respect for people that have been governor, been the chief executive, and had to make tough decisions.
Mm-hmm. You've named mostly just establishment, GOP establishment candidates. If a non-establishment candidate like Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, who are leading in the polls now, win the nomination, I wonder, what are your thoughts on how that would reshape the Republican Party?
Well, I think a lot of people are really upset with Washington, D.C., the national mess, the lack of leadership we have on foreign policy, and the huge national debt, and they want a new approach. And I think that's why some of these outsider candidates have appealed very well. And obviously, I think Americans as a group, not just Republicans, are not happy with the direction this country is going and want to see new leadership. And so I would not be surprised that you could see a non-traditional candidate do much better than normal. I don't think experience is necessarily what people are looking for now. They're looking for leadership, and they're looking for somebody that will restore American greatness.
Okay. Governor Branstad, again, we appreciate it so much coming into our Des Moines studio. Governor Terry Branstad, a very quick, it's New Year's. We're just a few days into the new year. Do you have a personal New Year's resolution?
Well, I made a decision last year to give up all sweets.
Yep.
I'm proud to say I'm going to continue that resolution and trying to do everything I can to lead by example. I want Iowa to become the healthiest state, and I want people to take ownership of their own health. And that's one of the best ways we can control health care costs.
Okay, more power to you on that. Thank you, Governor Branstad. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with the producer of a new Iowa Public Television documentary about the Iowa caucuses. That's when we return. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, the Iowa caucus is less than a month away. Iowa Public Television is debuting a new documentary about the caucuses. The documentary profiles the caucuses through the eyes of political insiders starting back in 1968. Richard Bender, who was the architect of the 1972 caucus system, explains in this excerpt from the documentary how Iowa became the first state to hold its caucus on accident.
I mean, we're first in the nation because we sort of fell into it. If there had been a formal, like, national party decision, you know, I'm very doubtful Iowa would have ever ended up where it was.
In the aftermath of Chicago, a band of Iowa Democratic operatives moved to restructure the process of sending delegates to the National Convention, a path of reform. Young staffer Richard Bender was tasked with developing the new system, but the concept was centered around electing delegates fractured by issues like the Vietnam War and abortion.
I think it was a pure accident. I mean, just remember, when the original proposal went to this little group of four, I mean, we weren't even thinking you have to divide by candidate.
Okay, that's an excerpt from Caucus Iowa, Journey to the Presidency. Andrew Bott is with us, producer for Iowa Public Television, produced this documentary. It debuted this past Monday and re-airs tomorrow, Friday, at 8:30 in the evening. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben. Great to be here.
So pick up on that story. It's fascinating. And if you come from Iowa, travel around the country, of course, the Iowa caucuses are well known. But a question you will attest to, I ask this question, how did Iowa get the caucuses? Give us in a nutshell how Iowa rose to such prominence that you tell in this documentary.
Yeah, and that's a big part of the story, and that's something that Richard Bender, who was there firsthand, does a good job of explaining. But really, it was kind of a reaction to events. And as he says, it was a pure accident, even for those that were involved directly that never intended it to become what it was. The catalyst for a lot of that, and that's something that David Yepsen, a longtime reporter for The Register, says at the beginning of the documentary, is really a catalyst for this is the 1968 convention in Chicago, which was by all estimations a disaster for those involved, for the event planners, for the Democratic Party, for the more liberal wing of the party that wanted a more open process, and the evaluation that came out of that was they didn't know how they wanted to change the system. They wanted to change the system across the country, and the folks in Iowa really got the ball rolling with what they wanted to do, and they were really more focused, and something Richard Bender explains, they were more focused on the issues of the time, the Vietnam War. Abortion is still an issue, but it was a newer issue at that time and a big one, and they were focused, and something that Richard Bender explains is they were focused on a caucus system that would highlight those issues and bring them to the forefront without dissecting the party too rapidly.
Mm-hmm. In the next two election cycles following 68 and 72 and 76, the Democrats really took advantage of the Iowa caucuses. We had, as you explain in the documentary, McGovern using Iowa to catapult himself up near the front. Also, 1976, I guess, there is your very first example of a caucus winner. Well, coming in second to undecided, but winning as a human to the caucuses, going to the White House and Jimmy Carter.
Right. And one thing that's relative in both of those, and that's something that I had a chance to interview George McGovern for this project 5 years ago. He has since passed away. But one thing that's a theme throughout this is not just the importance of Iowa, but it's some of these candidates, McGovern included, didn't really know how important it was to finish second until he saw it the way media covered it. It was really how he saw the reports, that something he says in the documentary. We didn't know that it was a good thing to finish second to Muskie in 1972 until we saw that it was a headline in newspapers across the country, including the New York Times. And that is something that Jimmy Carter's folks realized early on, and they knew that the media coverage of it was just as important as doing the work on the ground.
So it's really about not coming in first. You can theoretically, and there are examples of this, coming in first, but if you perform below expectations, if you were expected to get first, and you get it first, but not by much, it's not as good as, well, coming in second, but vastly exceeding expectations.
Right, and that's such a consistent theme that you'll see throughout this documentary, whether it be from someone like George McGovern, someone like Jimmy Carter, and we had a chance to interview Gary Hart, who in 1984, his caucus total was way behind Vice President Walter Mondale. Walter Mondale had almost 50%, and he had high expectations, and someone like Gary Hart just had to come in and, as Joe Trippi said, be the other guy. And Gary Hart told us that it's all about beating expectations. It wasn't necessarily what that number was. It was And that's a shifting thing for everybody. And he had very low expectations in 1984.
Andrew Bott is with us, producer for Iowa Public Television. He produced a new documentary, fascinating, titled Caucus Iowa, Journey to the Presidency. We'll answer a lot of your questions about the Iowa caucuses, how they came to be. It covers elections starting in 1968 through 2004. Andrew, I wanted to play another little clip from this that deals with 1980. Let's take a minute to talk about that after we hear this. In 1980, George H.W. Bush, the first Bush president, won the Iowa caucuses by calling it the impossible dream. He beat Ronald Reagan. Of course, we know now what he was destined for. Let's listen to a little bit of that section of your documentary.
The impossible dream, the asterisk on all these polls just 4 months ago.
Bush, 110, Reagan, 38.
So George Bush is clearly the favorite here among these Republicans.
Reagan was in California, downplaying Iowa.
A straw vote that does not necessarily represent.
I talked to my friend Sears, who was an old friend of mine from Nixon days. I said, John, what happened? He said, we got as many votes as we expected. He just got more than we did.
Okay, so this is a fascinating part of caucus history. 1980, Ronald Reagan chooses to, well, not ignore it, but not really dedicate too many resources here.
Right, and, you know, looking back on this, I didn't experience this in my life, but looking back at lots of history and the interviews, it's pretty unbelievable how much they really didn't think Iowa was going to matter, and they opened a door for a guy that later became the vice president and a president and had a son that was president of the United States in George H.W. Bush, and he worked for it. And we had a chance to interview James Baker, who was a close friend and later Secretary of State, who was instrumental in that campaign. And he makes it very clear that going into 1979, he saw what Jimmy Carter did, and he was going to pick up the Jimmy Carter playbook and adopt it for what he thought the first time to the Republican side of the aisle, and he was going to bring George H.W. Bush in here, and he was going to work for it, and that's what he did. He hit the ground running and spent a lot of time in Iowa, and it might not have mattered as much if it weren't for the fact that Ronald Reagan opened the door and their campaign, as your previous guest, Governor Terry Branstad, at the time was a Reagan supporter, and he made clear that he felt to the Reagan campaign that they were really opening the door to the then former head of the CIA, George H.W. Bush, and that they should get to Iowa. Mm-hmm. And Governor Branstad, in the documentary, and this is a story he's shared many times, says they didn't listen to him and they didn't really return his phone calls. And they felt that, as James Baker said, Ronald Reagan at the time was the prohibitive favorite. It was a juggernaut. And why 1980 is so important, and sometimes it gets glossed over because Ronald Reagan won the New Hampshire primary in a comeback and went on to win the nomination. Why 80 in Iowa is so important is because what James Baker told us was that Ronald Reagan never wanted to put George Bush as his vice president. He said he would have never made that choice. Because George H.W. Bush won Iowa, he became the primary challenger in that race and went on to have a lot of following in the Republican Party and put himself in position to be chosen. And, you know, the rest is history. So that caucus has a lot of importance on why the Iowa caucuses are important, not just on the Democratic side of the aisle where they really started, but on the Republican side as well.
Mm-hmm. And you make the point in this documentary that the Iowa caucuses are not just about picking presidents. If you use that as only one bit of criteria, of course, sometimes it has successfully in Jimmy Carter's case, in Barack Obama's case, and also, as we just talked about, George H.W. Bush with less success. Doesn't always go to the White House. It's about shaping the presidential race. So it's really about being the first in this sequence of caucuses, of primaries that go across the country, isn't it?
That's right. And, you know, we spoke to a lot of former candidates on both sides of the political aisle, whether it be former Vice President Walter Mondale or former Senator Gary Hart or Patrick Buchanan or Pat Robertson on the right. And one consistent theme they said was they understood the importance of Iowa. They valued their time here. But they also said, you know, if Iowa ended the race right there, it probably wouldn't be good for the future of the caucuses because there might not be an interest in the rest of the country if the race began and ended right here in Iowa. And it's the way Iowa shapes those races, not necessarily that we are the ones to pick the president right off the bat and no one else has a choice in the matter. It's probably actually a boon to the caucuses rather than a drawback.
Andrew Bott is with us, producer for Iowa Public Television, and produced the new documentary that re-airs tomorrow night on IPTV, Caucus Iowa, Journey to the Presidency. You're a relatively young man, Andrew. A lot of this history is actually before your time or before you would care about politics. But I'm wondering, right, what is another point in this documentary that you found fascinating?
Well, there are many points, but 80 was a big one. We already talked about that. But 88 was also an interesting year in the sense that we documented it. It's not when the evangelical movement started in the Republican side of the aisle. It's really when it was first noticed. And we had a chance to sit down with Pat Robertson, who was known as a televangelist at that time and ran for president. And he made a point that I found fascinating, was that he felt that his rise in 1988, and he got a lot of attention, even though he finished second behind Bob Dole, who had a great year in 1988. But the story was that he beat the vice president of the United States, George H.W. Bush, that night. And that was the story coming out of that. But he made a point, and it was something we were able to find the footage of. That night, George H.W. Bush wasn't there. It was his son, George W. Bush, who, as we know, would later become president. He felt that George W. Bush was so disappointed that night, but that he realized that this is Pat Robertson saying this, that he felt that he realized the connection he made with Iowa evangelicals. And that's something that he adopted when he came back a decade later. Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of his connection in the early part of that race.
And, of course, Iowa evangelicals playing a huge part in more recent caucuses. We look to Mike Huckabee, to Rick Santorum in the 2012 caucuses there. Filmmaker, what did you find to be the biggest challenge here? You named all kinds of very important people in caucus history that you talked to. What were the challenges you faced?
I think challenges is there are a couple things, but feeling like when you're trying to take four decades of history and figure out what you're not going to talk about. And there is so much to talk about, and there is such a rich history here that it's easy when you take a step back from it to gloss over some of those things. But when you are invested in trying to document just about every year in the Iowa caucuses and try and get the opinions of so many folks involved, whether it be politicians of all political stripes, Iowans, and campaign managers, it's tough to figure out what you're not going to talk about and what you can include, because there is such a rich history here in Iowa and with the caucus campaigns.
Mm-hmm. You went to Boston. I don't know if this made it into the document. You talked to Michael Dukakis. What did you learn from him?
Right. And one of the facts of our documentary is an hour long, and we're looking to hopefully expand some of that in the future. And one of the things that's not in it is an interview we did with Michael Dukakis in Boston. And he had a lot of fantastic stories learned a lot from him about his campaign, and he talked about a couple things in 1988 that he was obviously from Massachusetts, governor of Massachusetts. He was kind of viewed as a Northeastern liberal Democrat, and he said he could have had a strategy where he just stayed and went right across the road, as he put it, into New Hampshire, and that would have been the easy way to handle it. But he – and this is a warning he sent out to anyone that thinks that they can do that in the American presidential race now, is that – if you're going to run for president, at some point you're going to run a general election. And for those that feel like they can run a regional primary, that you're already setting yourself back. And he was adamant about that. And that's one of the things that he said early on in that campaign. He could have made that choice to try for the easy play. I mean, he didn't win Iowa. He finished third. And he was, as the phrase goes, the three tickets out of Iowa, he was able to utilize that going forward. But that was something he was adamant about, that he learned a lot coming to Iowa. He learned a lot about agriculture. Some of it was lampooned in the papers because he didn't know a lot about Midwestern agriculture. But he said that made him a better candidate.
Mm-hmm. Turnout goes up and down depending on the election cycle. What did you learn about in making this and studying these four decades of Iowa caucus history about turnout?
Well, I think it's relative to year over year. I'm sure your listeners that are tied into politics will read some stories in the coming weeks about how, you know, the folks that do turn out on caucus night here in Iowa are not the majority of Iowans. There's still a small sample of Iowans because you're talking about primary processes and even with all this attention. But, you know, turnout comes and goes. I mean, it's relative. There's a clip of the in 1976 we had of old archival footage shooting at the Iowa Democratic Party headquarters on caucus night where they're talking about the record turnout, that it's an amazing turnout. Well, I mean, of course, that's minuscule by today's numbers, and obviously numbers like 08 with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. It's kind of a relative – I'd put it relative to year over year, but it's fluctuated.
Mm-hmm. Now, this documentary launches some more caucus programming on Iowa Public Television. You've got a three-part series coming up focused on the 2016 race that's premiering next week. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. It's called Caucus Countdown, and we looked for kind of some opportunities to – we know that even those that are engaged in politics in the Iowa caucus campaign, the folks that come out to Iowa, they start coming out pretty early, more than a year in advance and well over that. And not everyone's, frankly, paying attention. But in our efforts, we're doing a three-part series where we spent time on the road with candidates across Iowa at some places, events that any Iowan could have gone to see, and many didn't, with candidates, and other events where we worked with event organizers to be kind of backstage and be a fly on the wall to kind of get a perspective of what this Iowa caucus race is through the eyes of candidates. And it was something that kind of inspired us to do something a little bit different. And I think Iowans have a chance to tune into Caucus Countdown, which starts this next Monday night at 9. Mm-hmm. And there's three episodes. We kind of follow the first 6 months of the campaign in our first episode. And then for anyone that experienced it this year at the Iowa State Fair, it was quite a political extravaganza. It was pretty amazing. And that encompasses almost the greater part of one of our episodes of that.
What candidates are you choosing to follow in this upcoming documentary series?
Well, as you know, Ben, there's only a few of them this year. We're trying to do as many as possible, frankly. We're trying to cover on both sides of the aisle. By nature of it, there are so many more Republican candidates, so there's going to be more Republicans than Democrats. They outnumber them in Iowa this year, about 16-3. So we're trying to give you a glimpse into the majority of candidates, frankly. Maybe not every single one, but a majority of the candidates, and we try to get around the state, all the way from Council Bluffs on the western end to a winery in Durango on the eastern side of the state.
Of course, part of the caucus story is criticism of the caucuses, of mm-hmm. Iowa being the location of the first in the nation test of political presidential candidates. I wonder if you explored that in terms of Iowa not being diverse enough or diverse enough to reflect the nation, I guess I should say.
Right. I think that's an ever-present factor when someone, even those in Iowa, but especially outside, look at Iowa. That's one of those questions that always pops up. It's why we didn't delve deeply into that in our hour-long project on Caucus Iowa Journey to the Presidency, but it's something that was present in all of our interviews. And, you know, none of the candidates or campaign managers we talked to made that case. The ones that were successful and the ones that weren't that successful ever made the case that it wasn't very representative. And in that question of is it representative, it always leads to the next question of what else would you do? And one of our interview subjects, James Baker, was actually commissioned alongside former President Jimmy Carter in the mid-2000s to look at that that process of the early presidential primaries. And he kind of walked us through what the options were. And he was very frank about he wouldn't change it. All the other options on the table, he didn't. The question always was, what's better? And there's a lot of diverse opinions about that.
Mm-hmm. I was treated to some old footage of our colleague, Dean Borg, not only works for Iowa Public Television, but
right.
also Iowa Public Radio. I see him almost every day, and it's a real treat to work with a man of such expertise and so many decades of working in news here in Iowa. You have some old footage in this documentary of Dean Borg on Iowa Press or at political events. That's a real treat.
Well, Ben, I have the pleasure of working with Dean at Iowa Public Television on our weekly Iowa Press show as well. So I know Dean pretty well. And in digging through these, I probably watched more old Iowa Press episodes than I'd care to acknowledge on the radio right now. But Dean's been around a long time. And that's what's amazing about folks like him, that you look back and there's interviews with him, you know, almost 40 years ago with presidential candidates. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And Dean Borg still out there today doing our reports on various things. So remind us, Andrew, again, how can people tune in for this Iowa Public Television documentary?
For the history documentary, it'll re-air Friday night, tomorrow night at 8:30 on Iowa Public Television, and it's already available online at iptv.org anytime with mobile device or online anywhere. You can watch the full documentary. It's on there in its entirety. Mm-hmm. And our series, Caucus Countdown, on the 2016 campaign starts Monday night on Iowa Public Television.
Okay. Andrew Bott, do you do documentaries about other topics other than political topics when it's not a heated caucus this season?
Is there anything besides politics going on?
Not at this time in Iowa. Andrew, thank you very much. Producer for Iowa Public Television, his documentary titled Caucus Iowa, Journey to the Presidency. You want to catch that tomorrow night on IPTV when it re-airs at 8:30 p.m. Andrew, thanks for coming into our studio today.
Thanks, Ben.
And we want to go out with a little bit of music from this documentary by Mark Russell. If you're a Mark Russell fan, you're going to love this. In just a moment, after I thank Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth for producing Iowa Pub for River to River. Also, Catherine Perkins, our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Let's enjoy this little bit of music. It's called Farewell from Iowa by Mark Russell.
Farewell from Iowa to all you politicians and media stars on the make. You took us for rubes with your spots on the tube while polluting the air in your wake. Promising this, promising that, you camped out all night on our lawn. Now we make our choices. We're tired of your voices. Oh, how we'll rejoice when you're gone. Iowa, Iowa. Oh, how we'll rejoice when you're gone. So farewell from Iowa to all you politicians. Please pay for the farmers you rented. And your photo ops will be good for the crops with your speeches designed to enthrall. We must give you credit the way that you spread it. Our corn will be 40 feet tall. Everyone!